Hello, everyone. Once again, welcome back to another edition of the Backlog Review Game Club. My name is Chris. It's good to see you. How are you doing? You hanging in there?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there. My name is Paul. I don't know if I needed to say that or not, but...
It's all right. I was talking to the collective audience, but I was going to get to you, too.
Well, also, my salutations. And how are you?
Yeah. How you just, did you guys hanging in there? It's all good. We're glad to be back. Glad to hopefully bring you some distractions for you for another hour and talk about some video games. But yes, I am Chris, joined as always by the one and only, my good buddy Paul.
Hello, everyone. Glad to be here once again. With you in spirit.
Yes, right. We're coming to you through the magic of the internet, as most things are nowadays. So,
I would say, while we are socially distanced, Chris, mm-hmm. we are not distanced socially. As we're here together.
Yes, that's true. We are. We're here together. Through the pipes of the internet have brought us together once again.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So we are coming back. We have a very special episode this month. Not like a very special, we're going to teach you about drugs and why you shouldn't do them kind of episode.
No PSAs.
PSAs.
I can't promise no PSAs, but...
Yeah, I mean, you never know what we're going to get into.
There's always the possibility, yeah.
You never know. This month is going to be a little random in terms of how we discuss the games, but we are coming to you to pitch, I guess we're pitching each other games that haven't, so background information, we have this little Google spreadsheet of games that we put together months ago when we first started this, and it was, these are the games that I have, these are the games Paul has and has played. You know, can we, if we want to do this one, can the other person get this? Or, you know, is it easy to get? Do we already have it? Can we share a copy? Things like that. Or, you know, fun logistics, which is what everyone wants to hear about on a podcast.
Spreadsheets. Yay.
Spreadsheets and documents. So we put that together and we've been using that ever since. But there's a couple of games that we've talked about that haven't made the list. For one reason or another, mostly because it's like, oh, I only have this on PS4 and there is no Xbox equivalent. Or, you know, for a while it was, oh, Paul doesn't have a Switch. But that one that one got remedied lately, so we're good there. So yeah, we, in the interest of full disclosure, it's a time right now where I'm spending a ton of time in my office. And the last thing I want to do is spend more time in there. So I thought of a way to kind of freshen things up and try something new out. We would do this special where we just kind of pitch anything, even if we know the other person can't necessarily play it. But, you know, make a pitch for something that we've played and enjoyed that we think the other person needs to play, even if logistically we can't make it happen. So it's like a mini pitch spectacular.
Pitch-tacular.
That's
2020
right.
2020 quarantine edition. Do we have any rules for these pitches? Is it elevator style? Is it long form?
Ooh.
Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I don't think we need to put too many rules on it.
No limits.
I think it's do your best to present the game you want the other person to play, and what are the reasons you enjoyed it? You know, why do you think the other person would enjoy it?
Yeah.
You know, whatever you need to do to make the sell. We're like used car salesmen here. You know, just get them
numbers
up.
Come on down. I can see the commercials now.
Yep.
These deals are too great to last.
What do I have to do to get you into this copy of Metal Gear Solid 3? That's not on the list, but you can rest assured that game's coming.
So yeah, rest assured we'll be playing it at some point. I feel like there was something else I was going to say, but I can't remember. So let's move on.
Yeah. Before we do jump into the games, we each have four games. I think we should do our mandatory couple minutes on Animal Crossing, because I know we did mention it last month that we would at least discuss it.
Yeah, we'll do that, but let's table that just for a second, because I did want to give an update on Oxenfree, because we talked about it last month.
Okay.
I reviewed positively, and I'm still positive. I still enjoyed it. But something stuck with me in that you said, you know, a month from now or whatever, I don't think that I'll be, like, it'll be sticking with me. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It didn't really stick with me. So, you know, while it was still positive, it was still a fun game. And maybe it would have stuck with me more had I tried, you know, doing the multiverse, and not multiverse, but just trying multiple times.
I think it was a good first game from a studio that was trying to do something like their old jobs, but different.
It's promising, you know? For sure.
Yeah, and I still haven't really dug into After Party.
Yeah.
I still want to do that, because I just love the story of that already out of the gate so much more.
Yeah.
And then Epic had to give away Civilization VI, and now I'm losing all my time to that. But all right. But yeah, let's. I guess we should do a brief talk about Animal Crossing.
Yeah, let's do it.
Since it is the game of the moment, and rightfully so. So, I don't know if you know this, since you're a relatively new Switch owner, but you can kind of like, there's a profile page that you can look at for yourself on the Switch, and it tells you how many hours.
Mm.
Not like, for, I don't know, it's such a Nintendo way to do things, but they don't give you exact numbers, they give you rounded off numbers.
It's like X hours or more, which I think is such a weird way to say that.
I know, like, why, just give me the number. What is about? So hard? Yeah, why do you gotta be weird about it? Like, you can round it, but just get, like, this or more. What is it? But, so I looked, and at Animal Crossing alone, and I know this number isn't inflated like Stardew was, because it forces you to use your own profiles, so I don't have anybody else logging into my island, but, I have 90 hours or more Animal Crossing since it came out.
I think I looked... And, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say is it makes total sense, because that was the thing. This is the only game I've been like latched onto now for like the last month.
Yeah. Yeah, I looked, and I think I'm at 30 hours or more as of Friday or a couple days ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's certainly something that I think we'll probably have sort of differing opinions on this, but I'm enjoying it. But sometimes I'm just like, I don't know if I want to commit the time, because I know as soon as I start playing it, I'm going to just keep playing it for like hours, because there's just like one more thing that you see that you want to do or like one more thing or whatever. But it's certainly enjoyable. And yeah, I don't know. It takes me back. You said, is this the first one you've ever played?
It is. I do have a copy of Animal Crossing for GameCube, but I only bought that, what was it, like 4 years ago now? It was briefly when I was borrowing like someone's Nintendo Wii for a bit. And I was just like, oh, I'll get, you know, this plays GameCube games, so I'll get Animal Crossing and see what that's about. And so I maybe put like an hour or two into that, but it wasn't quite the same. So I never had a GameCube. You had the GameCube, I didn't.
Yeah, yep. And I played the crap out of the original Animal Crossing, and I loved it. And I just wonder if, I mean, there's certainly like just so much more to do in this one, but like I wonder if part of my hesitation is just knowing like, I've already spent I don't know how many hours doing very similar things.
Yeah,
on the original. No,
I can totally understand that. So I never played the original, and I definitely never played like the DS ones that came later.
Yeah,
which I've heard are probably the superior ones now. But well, maybe not to this one. This one really kind of it hit at the perfect time. Because it was like a week into quarantine. It was like the perfect escape game. You were able to just like, I lost so many hours to that, and it was like, what else was I gonna do? But it's so enjoyable. There's, you know, there are a lot of little things now that I'm 90 hours in that I think could be smoother.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, like, it's just a relaxing time. And I've even cooled off on it a little bit because I'm at the point now where, you know, I got KK Slider coming to, you know, he's already been at my island. I have paths built. I have... you know, I can do the terrain and the terraforming, and that's been a lot of fun. But unless I really want to blow up my island, which I still might do, you know, I'm kind of happy where things are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, right now, my main motivation has been like occasionally playing the stock market, which this week I am not because I have real bad numbers. So it's just like, we'll back off. But yeah, I have three. I think I'm on the fourth or fifth house upgrade, but that just means I have three rooms now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my next one is I get the attic, and then after that you get the basement. But I'm still paying that one off. And yeah, it's just now I'm at the point where if I just want to chill out for a little bit, I'll play that for like maybe an hour or two. And when they do like seasonal updates, I tend to play it a little more. So when they did their Mayday stuff, it was pretty fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's you know, there's a reason it's the game of, like, it's literally the game of the moment. It's everywhere you look. Everyone's doing something with Animal Crossing, and people are doing some amazing things with it. Have you seen the video going around where someone took that Backstreet Boys scene from Brooklyn Nine-Nine and redid it in Animal Crossing?
No.
It's my favorite one.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yep, they did the I Want It That Way scene from the intro of a Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode, and then did that with Animal Crossing, and it's fantastic. So yeah, I think that pretty much covers what we need to about Animal Crossing for now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's certainly a check in to say.
Certainly a nice way to relax. Certainly a nice way to just kind of forget everything that's going on.
Yeah. We can maybe do a deep dive on it maybe in the future. But for right now, yeah, there's a reason why it's one of the best selling Switch games now, I think, of all time. Like, it's a damn good game.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yep. All right. So let's dive into our list. So as I mentioned earlier, we each have four games. We're going to pitch them back and forth. And I think, Paul, you should go first since this was your idea.
Okay.
And let me bring up my document here. All right.
So
if I go side by side.
The first one is not going to be... Actually, I think a couple of these really aren't going to be very surprising for you. Because I sort of have alluded to them already. But the first one, we'll get this one out of the way. We've got Super Metroid.
Okay.
We got, you know, came out in 1994, published by Nintendo. This game is quite literally one of the greatest games of all time, both critically and, you know, personally. So that's you know, one thing that's in its court. One positive for sure. A pretty huge positive. I mean, it along with Castlevania sparked a whole new genre of games, or layout of games. You know, Metroidvania, as cliche as that is anymore. I think Souls-esque is quickly becoming the next cliche type thing. But you know, this Metroidvania that's certainly an old hat at this point, but it's, you know, it's a great system of playing games, or of creating games, I guess. The other thing too for me is that this game never feels like it's outdated. I've played it most recently, you know, a month or two ago, and it always feels fresh. Like, the controls always feel good. It never feels like, oh yeah, this is a Jesus, 26-year-old game.
Yeah.
This it feels really good, and like you even see now with a lot of, you know, 16-bit side scroller remake type games, you know, a lot of them are still hitting those same marks, and they, you know, they all feel kind of like that. So you know, certainly lends itself to greatness there, I guess. There is like just enough where the hell should I go next in that game to keep it interesting. The nice thing too, you know, the big upgrade I would say from the original Metroid to Super Metroid is that it comes with a map. And so you can, you know, you can look at the map, you can see where you've explored, where you haven't explored. There's large swaths, you know, until you retrieve like map data that you can't see until you go into the rooms. So there's just enough like, all right, I've got this thing now. What do I do with it? But it's fun because as you're exploring, you see places you know you can't go, and you know, it's pretty easy to harken back to those in your mind and just think, oh yeah, maybe with this thing I can get there. So it's a lot of fun. It's very exciting every time you get something new. Fun, challenging boss fights. They're all pretty wild, and they all have different kind of characteristics, which is good. Really beautiful, atmospheric soundtrack. Some parts of it I think I've described to other people as clinical. Like it's just very like sort of creepy, sparse, not a whole lot happening in the music, and then others are more, you know, I would say just like a little more dense sonically, but either like wherever you are, it always fits with what's going on. The weird, it's not cyberpunk, but just like, you know, you're in this sort of living, breathing world, but also there's, you know, machinations, and you know, there's a lot of like laboratories and structures and all of that kind of stuff, and so going into those different sort of areas, I think the music really lends itself to kind of the atmosphere where you are. So I think that's really cool. And my last point here is just sort of tying into what I said before, like each section of the world is unique. And I don't really think anything feels repetitive or boring. And even the parts where like you're in a really long hallway, like you're in a really long hallway for a reason. Like, you know, it's because you need to have like the super dash to like get through a wall or like whatever, like everything is so well constructed. And everything is built in such a way for a purpose that I think the world, again, it's just beautifully done. So
yeah,
that's my pitch. And I'm sticking to it.
I like it. I should. So yeah, I did know this was going to be on the list because you actually did like text me like, "Hey, did you ever like finish Super Metroid?" And I was like, "No, I think." And I feel like I need to defend myself a little bit because I know people are going to be like, "Wait, you've never played Super Metroid? Like, what the hell's wrong with you?"
Yeah.
And it's that it's like I get with a lot of these older games that I kind of miss the first time around. So when I got the NES Classic again, I played a bit of Metroid for a while. And, you know, I played more than I thought I was going to, but I was having that same issue of where the hell do I need to go next?
Yeah.
You know, I'm very lost and I wasn't motivated enough to go like look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just like, all right, whatever. And like the NES Classic I'm glad it's fun to have. It's fun to break out, especially whenever you have, you know, family around or whatever. But I don't know. There was just nothing pulling me to it. And then I think whenever the Switch drop their NES or the Super NES stuff, I believe Super Metroid's in there.
It is, yeah.
Okay. So I do think that is one of the ones in there that I am most eager to go back and really give it a shot, because I've heard many people over the years like tell me like Super Metroid is just that much better than the original. And like that is the game.
And well, honestly, I got
them on SNES.
Yeah. I mean, everything else is the atmospherics and all of that aside, it's the map. Like having the map is crucial.
Honestly, like, you telling me there's a map already made me want to play it a little more. It's like, yeah. Oh, thank God.
Yep. Yeah, and you, I mean, like I said, you don't, like, get the full map when you're playing, but or when you start, but you can find, like, the map data room, and then it shows everything and stuff. So it's well, either way, it's super helpful because you can, like, see where you've gone before, and, I, like, that in and of itself is super helpful.
Yeah. All right. So yeah, I think by the end of this, whenever we do our full list, I think I'm going to keep track in my head of the games you suggested and figure out, like, which ones I'm most excited to try now.
Yeah.
And same. So that was a good pitch for Super Metroid. Yeah, it's made me more interested in really giving it a shot. All right. So this one, first one on my list, I maybe mentioned it briefly, but I specifically held it off for this list. It's a game that just came out. I'm super excited about it. I think it's 100% in your lane. It's super in my lane, and I've been obsessed with it now for the last 2 weeks. It's been the first game since Animal Crossing that grabbed me. It's called SnowRunner.
Okay.
So SnowRunner is made by the people of Saber Interactive, published by Focus Home Entertainment. Saber Interactive is a studio that is usually like the kind of like a support studio. Like, they were brought in to help do some work on Destiny 2.
Okay.
They've over the years, they've just been brought in as like backup studio. So they'll hop in and help out. But they've done a few original titles.
Okay.
One of the original titles they did was a game called MudRunner. So okay. MudRunner is the original game in this series, and it's actually out on PlayStation Now right now. So if you have that service, I recommend trying it out. It's kind of rough, and you can definitely see the seeds planted for SnowRunner, like the stuff that they knew worked but needed refinement.
Mm-hmm.
So the basics of MudRunner is that it was a driving game, but it was a driving game that was hyper realistic in terms of mud physics. And
okay,
having to switch gears, you know, like, you couldn't just like jam on the accelerator the entire time. Like, yeah. It was a game where you had to focus on gears, like what gear you're in, what the terrain you're in is affecting how you're driving. You have a winch if you need it. But the first game, it was like more or less the same environment, and it was just delivering lumber.
Okay.
So that was it. So SnowRunner is the sequel to that. It just came out on PC and PS4 and Xbox One. On PC, it's an Epic Games exclusive for now, but whatever. I am in love with the changes they've made. Just seeing a little bit of MudRunner now, having played some of SnowRunner. So SnowRunner, it's the same idea. It's a hyper-realistic driving simulator where you have all manner of trucks. You start out the tutorial mission, you're in a pickup truck.
Okay.
And you have to drive through a flooded area of Michigan. And you have to, like, drive through very deep. Like, there's flooded areas. There's detours you then have to make. And you have to be aware of what gear you're in. You can enable all-wheel drive if your truck has it. You can so it's gear shifts, it's four-wheel drive, then you also have to manage your fuel.
Okay.
So if you run around with four-wheel drive on all the time, it burns your fuel faster. And in the beginning, like, fuel consumption rate doesn't matter so much, but later on in the game, there's like multiple locations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's fewer gas stations in between where you have to go.
Okay.
So fuel management becomes a much bigger deal. And it is fantastic. And one of the things I love with what they did is that they did the Assassin's Creed thing with the map. So there are watchtowers throughout the game. And so as you drive, you sort of build out the map. It's actually very Breath of the Wild, too. The map is kind of hidden. As you drive through it, you start to get like locations on your map, or you can get to watchtowers. If you get to a watchtower, it opens up a chunk of the map and populates it with missions and tasks for you to do.
Awesome.
And so as you drive around the world, you're incentivized to just explore a bit at first, because not only do you get to figure out, like, all right, this section I'm so not ready for because my truck doesn't have the stuff to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have the right suspension or the right tires or, you know. But by exploring, you find those parts for your truck, and you can, and they, you know, it unlocks for the truck you have or even other trucks in the level. So in the Michigan one, I found, like, the race suspension for my pickup truck. I found better tires. I found a better engine. There's upgrades to your winch. There's upgrades to the transmission that allow you to have finer control over each gear. Okay. So, like, by default, you get automatic, low gear, and then, reverse.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one I found was the automatic doesn't go as fast, but you get finer control over the low gear. So you have low gear minus, low gear plus. And that was such a big help to get to one of these watchtowers that I was getting stuck in constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a dream to finally get that upgrade. Like, it was so satisfying to finally get through that stupid mud and get to the watchtower and be like, yes, I got more of the map unlocked.
Yeah, that's so amazing.
Yeah, it scratches that, you know, you and I both grew up in the same small town, and while we weren't, like, you had a truck for a bit, I never really got to have a truck. But there is, like, some, like, there's some weird part, I feel like it's in our DNA that we, you know, there's something in there that just makes it appealing, even though I don't necessarily need to own a truck in real life.
Yeah.
it's just being able to take these big stupid vehicles and make them do things that they shouldn't do in this terrain. Oh, it's so immensely satisfying.
And let's be clear, the truck I had was an S10, so it wasn't anything beefy. It was essentially the car version of a truck, but still wonderful nonetheless. I love that car.
Yeah, I remember that S10.
Anyway,
And I've written down here, as you mentioned before, how things were getting Souls-esque. I literally wrote, it's the Dark Souls of driving games. Because I got a trailer stuck in the same terrain about 5 times before I realized that I could get the truck out, winch to the trailer, and then use the winch to pull the trailer out instead of just, like, constantly trying to reattach a trailer and pull everything out together.
So what platforms did you say this was on again?
This is on Xbox One, it's on PS4, and it's on PC.
Okay, well, it sounds like I know one of the next games I'll buy.
Yep.
Because you are correct. That is 100% up my alley.
Oh, dude, I when I started playing this, you were immediately the first person I thought of. I'm like, this is... The weird thing I've noticed, though, is the pricing. So on the Epic Game Store, it's $40.
Mm-hmm.
On consoles, it's $50.
Oh, weird.
And I think the only reason for that is that the Epic Game Store has a lower cut. So, like, the store isn't taking as high a cut as the console versions are. No. So I imagine they bumped it up $10 to offset it.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that definitely
I just have the standard edition. It does the same thing that all games are doing nowadays, but it's like deluxe, digital deluxe, gold edition, you know.
Yeah.
And that just gives you, you know, there's some very, like, paint jobs and stuff you can buy that are absolutely what you expect it to be.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of America and dumb shit like that. But man, it's such a good time. And I've been streaming it now that I've figured out how to get everything running. And I got, like, when I was streaming it the other day, someone pointed out to me that you can actually, like, change the time of day just on your map screen. And that alone was such a big help because, you know, you get stuck in these pits and it's dark out. And unless you have, like, the big fog lamps, you can't really see what you're winching to. So you just fast forward time and you're like, oh, okay, now I can see again.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of really smart little things in there. Like, the driving gets a little wonky sometimes, but overall, I think it's really something. It's really scratching a niche I didn't realize I had.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like something I would be interested in. Did you ever play Smuggler's Run? I think there were two of them.
I never had it, but I know what you're talking about because it was like one of the launch titles for PS2.
Yeah, I think I rented. Well, I don't know that I played the... I never had the first one, but I think I rented the second one. But I played the first one before. And for whatever reason, like, they're not the same. But, like, for whatever reason, that's the game that's, like, in my head when I'm thinking of, like, this type of thing. For whatever reason. But I just needed to say that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, yeah. So I will also try to keep a list here in my mind. But this is definitely something that sounds pretty great to me.
Yeah. I figured that of my pitches, this one was a slam dunk home run wrapped up in a taco. You know. Hopefully
it's from Taco Bell and let's get married. but anyway, so yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good first one. I'm a fan. Nice. All right, my second one, I don't think you've played this before. And I didn't just want to like ask you every game that I had or every game that I was thinking of, but I was looking through my list of games recently, and this is one that I really enjoyed, and it does stick with me from time to time. I think about it, and I just really enjoyed it. It's 2016's Unravel. Did you play Unravel at all?
I didn't. I think I got it as a free download, but I never bothered to try it.
Yeah, so developed by Coldwood Interactive and published by EA. That's the only dark mark on it, published by EA, but, you know, we'll look
you
past
what?
That.
I'll give them credit, though, because this was a time when EA was trying some things, because the last couple, I don't know if you know this, EA has been not doing so hot in, like, I don't know, this entire console generation.
Yep.
But yeah, so that was like a time when they were at least trying to look out to like the indie scene and publish some stuff that maybe wouldn't have gotten made otherwise.
Yeah.
So I'll give them credit because this one was I remember it being a genuine surprise.
Yeah. So, first off, huge. Well, let me backtrack real quick. I definitely think you would like this game. Like this is a genuine one for me.
All right.
And we'll get into this. First of all, maybe one of the cutest protagonists of all time. Yarny, is just a spun ball of yarn.
Yarny. But that
he's so cute. And God, there are like endings of levels where there's one in particular. It's actually the background on my Xbox home screen. Where he's like, finds this little yarn of it's like a fish. It's like the end of a memory. And he like hugs it. And I was like, oh my God, my heart melted. And, my heart of stone melted. No, anyway, but it was just, it's so cute. And anyway, so a huge positive in my eyes. It's also an emotional roller coaster of a story. It's not one that's, like, there's not really a whole lot of dialogue in it. There might be some like asides at the end of a level or something, but it's not. There's not a whole lot. You know, there's no dialogue within it. Like Yarny's not talking to anybody or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But you gain a lot of the story from pictures at the end of levels and just emotions. Like you can understand what's happening like via the atmosphere. Honest is kind of like a big one, but the atmosphere and then just the pictures at the end, like I said, and you're kind of learning about this story of this grandmother through all of these pictures. And as you like look through the house and stuff, the grandmother and this family, and it's sort of like, I guess the atmosphere is like, I don't want to say Celtic, but it's like Celtic or like Welsh. I think that's sort of where it's supposed to be. But anyway, so there's fun platforming and puzzles. You do a lot of cool things with the yarn that you have and you figure out puzzles that way. The design is beautiful. You know, a lot of times you're within, you know, kind of in somebody's backyard or it's like the winter or something like that, but it's, you know, this 2.5D, very, you know, a lot of depth to the landscape. It just looks really pretty. The water looks really nice and like just various things, you know, all of the things that you interact with physics based. Mm-hmm. You know, it all works very well and looks very nice. So, yeah, just very a very cool little game. I mean, it doesn't last very long, but just a lot is packed into it. Like I remember by the end of it, I mean, it was a tearjerker. I don't know like why I was getting that, you know, caught up in mm-hmm. it all, but just it was, like I said, like an emotional roller coaster. And I think, you know, that makes it perfect for you and I, because, you know, we tend to watch movies that end up being emotional date movies. We somehow that's what happens when we go to the movies together. So
that is true.
And we end up enjoying them. So anyway, yeah. I think that it'd be good for you. And also sort of a selfish plug, but Unravel 2 is out now, and I think there's a co-op mode, and I want to play it with somebody, but I don't have it.
Oh, right.
So whenever you play Unravel and beat it, we can play 2 together.
That's true. I have to look now and see. I definitely have a copy of at least one, but that just might be on PS4. Yeah, that is a game that I've seen show up on lists a ton, and it was one of those ones where I'm like, oh yeah, no, I heard a lot about it, so I download it, but then I just think I never downloaded it for whatever reason. Just it was like never, like there was always more pressing games at hand.
Right.
So I know this isn't the case, but I'm curious. So you know how like with a game like Yoshi's Woolly World or Yoshi's Crafted World, where the entire environment is like built with like craft supplies or yarn?
Yeah.
Is this one more like the character itself is yarn, but then everything else is like kind of looking more realistic?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so you're like, you are a piece of yarn or a yarn character, and mm-hmm. and it's actually cool because the mechanic is like you're unspooling as you move, and so you can only go so far, and you have to find other spools of yarn to like reconnect yourself, and so that's part mm-hmm. of sort of the puzzle mechanic. But you're essentially like exploring this person's backyard, and then, you know, going farther from there, like as the story goes, you're essentially like going into, yeah, not their backyard, but just you're sort of being sucked into the pictures and living the memory.
Almost like a Mario 64 kind
of
thing.
Sort of, yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. But yeah, I think it's just really well done. It was a really well done game.
Yeah.
Simple but fun.
Yeah. All right, that gives me a better context for that game now. Yeah, it's definitely one that, like, when it came out, I totally missed it. So I didn't really know what it was about.
Yeah.
And I think I might have assumed it was sort of in that camp of a Yoshi's Crafted World.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, oh, it's probably just a platformer.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's a lot more interesting than what Crafted World turned out to be.
Yeah, that one was... Well, I remember playing a little bit of that with you, and it seemed just kind of simple.
It's definitely for a younger audience.
Yeah.
Super, super... anyway, we're not talking about that game.
Yeah. I mean, cool. And this is saying Yoshi's Island 2, or sorry, Yoshi's Island,
mm-hmm.
one of, if not my favorite game of all time. So, you know, to say that this one's pretty simplistic and not as fun, yeah. Definitely say so.
It's still, I know you've said it to me before, and I know it is one of your favorite games. I know you played it recently. I just still, every time I play it, I have such a hard time getting through it.
Oh, yeah. The baby... It's bad.
Oh my god.
The baby screaming is not fun.
Yeah, it could be an entire episode. Yep. It's just Mario 2.
Yep.
All right. So, yeah, no, that I'm a lot more interested to dig into Unraveled now, just to kind of, I'm very interested to see the diving into the memories thing and to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
That seems like it could be really neat.
Yeah.
All right. So my next game is actually one that didn't even come into my head until last night.
Okay.
But I was reading a book called Blood, Sweat, and Pixels, mm-hmm. It was written by Jason Schreier, formerly of Kotaku, now for Bloomberg.com, writing about video games.
It's an interesting shift. You
know, yeah, right? Yeah, he got a much nicer gig, getting to do the same things he's always done. But, this book's really well done, talks about the development of a ton of different games. And I actually read the chapter last night on this game, Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight is made by Yacht Club Games. And Yacht Club Games is a group of, at the time, it was a group of five developers who used to work for WayForward. WayForward, if you don't know who they are kind of a work-for-hire studio where they just get, like, licensing deals and contracts through, they just do a lot of, like, games based off of movies that they can crank out within a year or a couple of months even. They're all pretty good. Their original stuff is they've made the Shantae series. So if you've ever played any of those over the years, this is WayForward. And I've played like the last two Shantae games and they're pretty good, like 2D platformers. Like they were making 2D platformers back when they were out of style. Mm-hmm. So now that they've kind of come back around, like I feel like they've worked out all the kinks and they have really solid platform games now. But so it was a group of five developers who used to work at WayForward. They wanted to do something different. They wanted to spend a little more time on a game. They wanted to try and do something through Kickstarter, and they really wanted to make like a franchise. Mm-hmm. Like they thought they had all the tools that they needed there at WayForward. They made a pitch to management to try to let them, like, let me have a team of, like, five or six people. Let us, fund it through Kickstarter even, and we'll try to do something different than we've been doing. And management was just like, yeah, no, it doesn't really work with our business structure. So they're like, fine, most of us are leaving. And so they quit. Most of them quit. One guy was going to stay on a little bit longer, but then management found out he was going to leave. So then they're just like, yeah, you should probably just leave now too. And he was just like, jeez. Oh, great. But anyway, so they got together. They figured out what they wanted to make. And they came up with Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight is kind of a throwback to an NES-type platformer. But as they described it, they wanted to make an NES platformer that was more of what people remembered NES platformers to be, with like the rose colored glasses and everything, as opposed to what a lot of NES platformers were, which was imprecise.
Yeah.
And very frustrating.
Yeah.
So they decided, like, all right, we're going to make a modernized version of an NES platformer, and we need to figure out one mechanic that we want to roll with and really maximize its potential. And so the one they agreed on was the down thrust from Zelda 2.
Okay.
So that was the mechanic they wanted to do, because they thought, man, that down thrust in Zelda 2 is really fun. Like, you can use it to flip over enemies, you can use it to jump higher, like, there's a lot of stuff we can do with it. So that's when they were kind of figuring out, like, oh, what if your main character had a shovel? And like, oh, what wouldn't it be funny if he was also a knight? And just like the idea of having a knight traveling the countryside with a shovel in hand.
Yeah.
Really, just that was so perfect to them. So that's where the idea came from. And so in 2013, they launched a Kickstarter. I think it was originally released on PC. But since then, this game has been ported to just about every platform you can think of. It was on the 3DS. It was on the Wii U. It's on the Switch now. It's on, I think, PS4 and Xbox One. And it's really something. We have so many like throwback platformer games now that I think it's really hard for them to stand out.
Yeah.
But this one stands out to me in a lot of ways. First off, the art and the animation is just so fantastic. It's really well done. You know, I think it's a great modernization of the NES look, but obviously not with the limitations of an NES. Like, I think the color palette is just so wonderful. The art is really great. It's not an easy game.
Yeah.
It's really a pain in the ass. I've picked it up here and there, and it, they have a checkpoint system which I think is pretty neat, where all of the checkpoints in the game are optional. So if you get to a checkpoint and you decide, oh, no, I'm good, and you kind of want to risk it, you can break the checkpoint and you gain more like cash and, you know, you get better stuff at the end of the level.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you die, you then have to go either all the way back or to the last checkpoint that you left enabled.
Yeah.
I've now decided that the next time I pick it up, I am just leaving all the checkpoints where they are because it's so not worth it. Because not only is the platforming can be very challenging, but so are the enemies. Oh, some of the bosses in there are just brutal. I'm trying to remember some of the characters that you play. Obviously, in the main game, you are Shovel Knight. There's Plague Knight. I can't remember the other ones now. It's been a little bit since I played it, but they, you know, they kind of went the Mega Man route where they had, themed bosses. And so you know, Shovel Knight has to go through the countryside and take all of them down. The really fantastic part is that up till even last year, they were still making content for this game. This game came out in 2013, 2014.
Oh, jeez.
And they were still, like, part of it was they still had to make good on some of the Kickstarter stuff.
Yeah.
But they've essentially created 3 or 4 new games out of it.
Wow.
So there's the original campaign. There's an entire campaign for Plague Knight. There's a third one where you play as another boss character, and I can't remember what that one's called. And then they even made a deck-building game.
Oh, jeez.
On top of that. And I actually do like the deck-building game, but it does still have, like, some tricky platforming stuff to get to the card-building part.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's such a very interesting game. And I'm shocked how much work they've put into it and have continued to put work into it. I know up until recently, if you just bought base Shovel Knight, you got everything for free. But I think as of last year, whenever they put out that card deck one, you now have to buy them individually.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they're essentially 4 games.
Yeah.
Like, they're 4 like indie games rolled into one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, even if you can just play base Shovel Knight, I think it's such a really good game. And I think, I know you tend to like some of those more challenging games, and I think this would really also be up your alley in terms of, you know, I think you would love the style. The action is so smooth, and, like, the boss fights are really fun when you finally figure them out.
Right, yeah.
It is a lot of just, you know, repetition and trying over again, but yeah, Shovel Knight I think is a very, very, very interesting platformer in an age where we have so many platformers.
Yeah, well, given that I just mentioned 2 platformers as games that you should play, I think 1, this is up my alley. 2, you also mentioned Mega Man, and I love the Mega Man series, so although super hard and have never beaten any of them, I love them so much. The third thing is that I was actually just like looking at something about Shovel Knight like yesterday, I think, and I've seen it so many times, and it's been one of those games that I was always like, I bet this would be pretty fun, but then I just kind of haven't done anything with it, and so yeah, I think you're convincing me.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think given your recent retro dive you were doing, where you were playing like some old Mario and some old NES stuff, I think you're gonna really love what Shovel Knight brings to the table.
Yeah, I think so. Very good. All right, so my third one. So the last two are more quick pitches.
Yeah,
I didn't have as much detail on them, but I thought it would be fun. So the first one is one that we've also talked about before. It is Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. So again, we're going throwback here. 1996, published by Nintendo, developed by Square. So they've got some RPG veterans.
So wild to me that game even exists.
All right, yeah. So this was actually the first Mario game to have a 3D world. So that's That's fun.
Huh. I don't think I ever knew that.
Yeah, so it's sort of a top-down or like sort of from an angle down 3D world, but 3D world nonetheless. It's the spiritual predecessor to Paper Mario and any of those turn-based attacks. So it's a turn-based attack game, excuse me. And while that's normally not my jam, it's funny just how many different things I remember from it, or if I'm like thinking back to old games I used to play, there'd be like little snippets of things that I think I'm like, what the hell was that even from? And then I'll remember, like, you know, weeks later, like, oh yeah, that's Super Mario RPG. Like, I can't believe that's so ingrained in my brain. But you play as Mario and his friends. You'll get some kind of weird side characters as well. But you have a troop of, I think, between 3 and 5 characters at any given time. And it works kind of like, you know, an RPG from the Super Nintendo era would. But I don't remember a whole lot of this game other than, like I said, these kind of like snippets over time. But because of that, I want to play it again, and I want to play it again with someone. So this is, again, a selfish pitch, I guess. The selfless part is that I definitely think that you would get into it because it's Mario, and I know how much you love Mario and the universe. It's an RPG, turn-based RPG. You like JRPGs and stuff, so you know, it's got that sort of style to it. And 3, you have that poster on your wall somewhere. I don't know where it is.
I moved it. I know what you're talking about. I had to move it.
Yeah.
And so I have Bowser's Castle, which it was only until you told me it was like, oh yeah, that's from Super Mario RPG. I'm like, oh, that's what that's from. Because I got it in a random poster pack from like Fangamer.
Yeah, it's a good poster. But we should figure out. You need to understand the poster in your room, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Yes. So yeah, that's my pitch for it. It's not long, but yeah. Again, I think it'd be fun.
I don't think you need a super hard pitch on that one, honestly. Like, I've been sold on that game. It's just a matter of finding a freaking copy of it.
Yeah.
It is so expensive. Oh my god. I do have Paper Mario on the N64, but I know it's just not the same.
Yeah, you know? I remember, like, it's playing
a whole separate system.
Yeah. I mean, it's not 2D like that. Well, 2D, but the it's obviously not paper, you know, it's not in the paper style, but just I almost remember it being kind of bizarre, like almost on a Mario 2 level, like, where the hell did this come from, you know, like kind of out of left field. Just good. One of my other memories of it is playing it and my dog from my childhood coming into the room and like playing at my feet, and then all of a sudden I couldn't move my characters anymore, and I realized that the dog had chewed through the wire of the controller.
Oh no.
Sophie, she's a great dog. That was not one of her greatest moments, but it was pretty funny.
Oh man. I want to play that game so bad because it's a Square developed RPG, like back in the prime era of Square RPGs. Yep. So I want to play it so bad.
Did they do Chrono Trigger as well? Was that Square?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that was all the same. Final Fantasy, they did Chrono Trigger, all that.
That's what I thought. I have Chrono Trigger. I've never played it. That's one that I feel like I should play. It's just speaking of Square and RPGs, but
yep.
Anyway, that's my pitch, and nice. Yet again, I'm sticking to it.
Well, this is good because my last two are quick pitches, but they're mostly in these are the tough sells. Because one is one I've already tried to sell you on, and I know it's going to be a hard sell.
I know what it's going to be.
You know exactly what it's going to be.
Yep.
And then the last one isn't, but I think it might be a hard sell. So the first one is Yakuza 0.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yep. I think I pretty much put this on the list immediately whenever you said, oh, we're going to make this pitch, because I'm going to make this pitch again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So Yakuza is a lot. Sorry. Yeah, Yakuza. I try to say it the right way and not Yakuza, like an ugly American. But Yakuza 0 is the prequel to the very long-running Yakuza series, which has primarily been PS2 and PS3 games. Recently, they did open it up, so that the future games are coming out on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. And I think, if I remember correctly, Yakuza 0 is now on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. So you can get them on all of them. So it's from the folks at Ryuga Kotoku Studio, which is what the Japanese name for the Yakuza series is. Yakuza 0 is the introduction of the mainstay characters in the series. So you really learn the backstory of Kazuma Kiryu, who is more or less the protagonist in every one of these games. And then you also learn the backstory of Goro Majima, who is the best character in the games, bar none, and no one can tell me otherwise. Goro Majima is the antagonist, for the most part, to Kiryu's protagonist, but a lot of times they work together for the greater good. Like, their relationship changes 20 times in this series, and I love every freaking second of it. Yakuza 0 specifically makes Goro Majima's backstory so much more tragic, and he's so much more relatable than he is in the later games. So it makes me wonder why they never bothered to tell his story until now, like the full backstory. And you kind of get snippets of it in the later games, but watching it, like actually playing out through him, like I have such sympathy for him going forward, which is so weird because he's insane. He's batshit insane. And I love everything he does. So this game mixes, so it's like an open world kind of game with a storyline throughout that kind of drives you to different places in multiple cities. It's mostly Kamurocho, which is a fictional city in Japan. I can't remember the real city it's based on. But this one starts out in like the 80s during what I think is called the bubble period in Japan. It's like when, you know, the economy was doing really well and everything was still good post-World War II before everything just collapsed. Mm-hmm. So there's like a lot of money being thrown around and everything is just gaudy and ostentatious. And it's just, oh, it's such a good look. I love it so much. So Kiryu, you kind of see him kind of get involved with the Kazuma family, who's part of the Tojo clan. And that's the family that he was kind of raised up in. Like, he is an orphan that was brought in by the series, and now he's kind of joining the Yakuza for the first time. And Majima has been in another part of the Tojo clan, but he was kind of like excommunicated, and throughout the game you kind of learn why. But this game mixes like ridiculous over the top action, like some of the most insane fight scenes I've ever played in a game, and some of the weirdest and most thought out mini games and side missions I've ever seen. Like, every side mission, and I always say this whenever I talk about this game, every problem in this game is solved with fists and punches. Like, punches, fists, kicks, all of it. Violence is always the answer in these games. But like, in such an over the top ridiculous way that it's just, I don't know why it's so enjoyable. It just is. It's absurd. It's like a crazy action movie times 100. And yeah, the mini games in the series, there's darts, there's bowling, and all of it. There's a karaoke mini game, for God's sakes, that is so interesting. I had to play like every song in it. Like, just the amount of time they put into those games alone was unbelievable. But look, I've showed it to you before, and I know one of the biggest problems is that it's not talk heavy. It's a lot of text heavy dialogue. And so you're like flipping through. It's really hard sometimes, and I've had this problem with these games. is that when it's not one of the really well done, like, voice acted scenes, it's a lot of text dialogue. And oh my God, is there so much, there's just so much exposition in this game that you could get through. And that's like my biggest knock against it, is that a lot of times I'm just sitting there skipping the buttons, like, yeah, I get it. Like, I know this clan did this, and I don't need 20 different versions of the story. So I know that part's harder. I think Zero is such a good introduction, and I think if you play Zero and any of it hooks into you a little bit, you have to try some of the other ones in the series. Like, I'm completely bought in now. I've played Zero, I played Kiwami 2, which are modern day remakes of the original, and now I'm on Yakuza 3, and I'm gonna get through them all, because Yakuza 7 is now a turn-based RPG, and it looks amazing. Yes, I need to get to 7, because one of the attacks I've seen in the trailer for 7 is that you can call in a bunch of lobsters to get dumped on your opponents, and, like, that's how you attack, is with, like, lobsters from the sky. Yes! I love these games so much, and I know I've tried to play them. I played a few around you, and I could already see your interest waning hard. But I'm gonna keep this pitch up.
It wasn't that my interest was waning, because that's not it. I think it's that to me is a hard game to just sit down in the middle of and try to understand anything that's happening. And so I think that was really a big part of it. I'm not necessarily, like, completely opposed to the game.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'll probably play it at some point. Your persuasion. it really just doesn't take much for me to just say, okay, whatever, I'll try it.
Yeah. It is on Game Pass.
Yeah, I have seen that.
Mm-hmm. Zero is on Game Pass.
So yeah, I mean, I think it'd be fun, and I honestly don't even mind a lot of exposition. I'm the person mm-hmm. who, like, loves Assassin's Creed games for, like, the historical background that I'm, like, the historical stuff that I'm learning as I'm mm-hmm. playing the game. So yeah, I would be cool with that. Honestly, not as cool as with it as the other two games that you've pitched to me, but
yeah.
I certainly am willing to give it a shot.
Yeah, I think, especially from the beginning, I think it does a much better job of dragging you in. But I'm telling you, man, it's like a small novel sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, all right, get through it.
Yeah, that's not
so first. The first couple side missions you get, completely sold me. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, that sounds good. I do love a good side mission, so.
Yeah, that is my sell once again for you, Yakuza 0, and I'm going to come back to it at some point.
Well, you've done a very good job, because my resistance is waning, so.
Yeah, man, it's there's nothing like it.
Well, then maybe it's time.
What better time than now is all I'm saying.
Just maybe not right now.
Yeah, not this moment. But.
Not this moment. All right, so my final one's very quick. We're going to go, and this one is on the Super Nintendo emulator thing on the Switch.
Switch.
Nice. It is 1994's Kirby's Dream Course.
This is gonna be a hard sell.
Produced by HAL Laboratories and Nintendo. First question: who doesn't like Kirby? Answer: no one except Chris.
Yeah, I'm raising my hand.
Second question: who likes mini golf? Answer: everyone who matters, you included.
Ooh, okay.
Kirby's Dream Course is a combination of the two. Get in the hole and play it already.
Okay. All right, I didn't realize that was a mini golf game.
Yeah, it's just Kirby going around. There's obstacles in that there's, like, enemies from Kirby games that you either have to eat for energy to get, you know, that count as your shots, essentially, toward the hole. And then Yeah, you can put spin on Kirby and like power, and you can you have to like unlock the hole, like you have to hit something first for the hole to open up, and then you go open it up, and it's all these crazy like hilly weird like you know, before 3D, but you know, it's sort of 3D landscapes, very polygonal and whatnot, but it's honestly a crap ton of fun. And like you can dislike Kirby games all you want, but like I know you love mini golf. I know, yeah, you love golf.
That brings me back around.
Yeah, so it's great.
Yeah. No, okay. I'm more willing to try that because it is a mini golf game. I don't know why Kirby's never done it for me. And maybe it's just because it's always been the last Nintendo game on a system. Like it was like it came out as on the NES after the Super Nintendo dropped. Came out on the Super Nintendo after PlayStation hit, and like it's always been like the last game Nintendo has done, and to me it's always felt like an afterthought.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I know a ton of people that love Kirby. It's never done it for me. But a mini golf game, hell yeah. I'll play the shit out of a golf game.
Yeah. I mean, here's a quick pitch for a different one. Want an essentially 15-minute game that's repetitive as hell and didn't have a whole lot of thought put into it, you know, for when you whip out that GameCube that you don't have. Kirby's Air Ride. Literally driving around on a star until you find a car, and then you do like a 2-minute race, and then that's it, and you do it all over again. Fun at all. That was a pitch to the negative. Don't play that game. I can totally understand. There are certainly a lot of Kirby games that leave a bad taste in one's mouth. I personally think there are a lot of really great ones too, but the Kirby's Dream Course is a lot of fun.
Okay.
If only for having a few beers and like just playing it for its ridiculousness.
That makes sense. That is a better pitch. I didn't realize that was just a mini golf game, but now I'll at least boot it up and try it out.
There you go.
All right. Well, so my last pitch is also a quick one because I'm in the middle of playing it finally in a way that doesn't crash all the time. It'll be I've talked about the game. It's just going to be a hard sell because it's a very polarizing game, but I think it's one that's worth trying out, and that's Deadly Premonition.
Okay.
Or if you have it on the Switch, it is for some reason called Deadly Premonition Origins. Because they're making a sequel to this absolutely insane game.
Weird.
So, Deadly Premonition is made by a company called Toy Box Inc. I don't know anything else about them. Okay. Toy Box Inc. The main thing to know about this game is it was directed by a man named Swery. Swery has a reputation in the industry for making some games that aren't necessarily the most polished, and maybe that's just a result of not getting the funding he needs. But man, they take some big swings. And they go some places and try out some, like there's some stuff in his games that you're just like, wow, no one else is thinking of this. Like if he ever got the right funding, this could be really something. Like he was behind, I think, the D4 games, Dark Dreams Don't Die. Which was like an Xbox, it was like an indie game that got like, it was supposed to have like 5 episodes and only ended up getting 3 or something because of funding. And then he started his own studio and he's coming out with a game soon called The Good Life.
Okay.
Which is like a game where you're like a detective in a small town, but then at night everybody turns into cats, you included.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh man. That one, I'm like, I need to see how that ends up. But that reputation was more or less built from Deadly Premonition. So this game was originally released on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. I don't remember what year. It was definitely supposed to be a PS2 game. And you could tell whenever you play it on the Xbox 360 or whatever you have. Even the Switch version. This game looks freaking rough. Ugh. Like, it barely made the jump to the next generation. The animations are hot garbage. The textures are bad. The controls are just barely put together. Like, the driving in the game is some of the worst driving I've ever played in a video game.
Okay.
the PC version, I have the director's cut on PC, and I cannot get it to even work with a controller. Like, there's a mod out there that actually makes the game runnable on PC. And then, like, jeez, it just does not like an Xbox One controller. Like, it flips the axis on the left stick 90 degrees so that up and down is left and right, and that left and right are up and down.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. I've never been able to play it on PC, so I had to buy it on the Switch because at least the Switch one ran. And the Switch one was based off the original release, which is not the director's cut, at least has some improved graphics and, like, slightly better animations. Oh man, this one, it's, if you've ever watched Twin Peaks, it's Twin Peaks. Or it's very heavily influenced by Twin Peaks.
Okay.
You play Francis York Morgan, an FBI investigator brought into this small town called Greenvale. There is a very crazy homicide that's taken place where a woman's body is, like, found hung up in a tree and more or less been, like, gutted.
Like Blood Eagled.
It's really horrible looking. I mean, not so much in this game because nothing looks good. But, like, the idea of it's pretty rough. But as bad as, it's really the only game I can think of that it's so bad, but yet there's so many interesting things about it that it's kind of worth suffering through some of it.
Okay.
Like, there's, like, an investigation mechanic that's actually kind of neat. Like, I felt like with more time and polish, it could have been something. The story itself is just utterly insane. The voice acting is so bad, but it's, like, kind of endearing in, like, a bad movie kind of way.
Okay, yeah.
Like, people just do not know how to, like, act in this at all. And, like, I've seen, it's, some of the characters are just, they're a mix of, like, weird stereotypes and, like, weird archetypes in these kind of films. Like, I'm pretty sure I ran into a character last night who was, like, an office lady, and her name was, like, Freckly Fran.
Okay.
Like, that was it, Freckly Fran. And she had a bunch of freckles and braces, and she was just like, ooh, the big detective's coming into town. And then there's, like, a kind of an effeminate cop, and I only say he's effeminate just because of the way they choose to animate him. Like, I don't understand if that's part of his story or not, because that, it's just the way they animate him.
Very strange.
But then when he talks, he just talks about, like, baking. That's baking? It. It's just baking. Like, he baked cookies or something, or he made brownies one time. And, like, one of my favorite scenes early on is you go into a hotel, like, you're staying at a hotel, and you are talking to the owner of the hotel because no one else is there, and she's serving you breakfast, and they very blatantly chose the biggest table in the cafeteria, or, like, the, I guess, the sit down area. They're on either end of it, and it's one of the biggest tables I've ever seen. And they even have a whole thing where your character is like, I can't hear you, why don't you just come closer? And she's like, no, we have all this space, we're going to use it. And he's like, what? And he's like, no, we got to use the space. I'm like, all right, I guess I'm going to yell now. Like, there's no point to it. And then the entire time that's happening, you just see, like, one of the medals that you're going to collect in, like, a minute as soon as they stop talking. It's just constantly floating in the background. Like, they couldn't be bothered or couldn't figure out how to remove it for the cutscene. So you just see a medal spinning over, like, Zach's head. Or not Zach, sorry, over Francis's head. I say Zach because there's, like, a whole nother character that Francis talks to all the time called Zach, which is sort of like, I guess he's, like, the proxy for you, the player, but he's also, like, this internal monologue that he has. So he's always very talking strange. To Zach, whoa, this town's kind of weird, huh, Zach? And you're like, oh, I guess so. Like, I don't know who he's talking to. And then, like, it does the whole Twin Peaks thing where, like, this weird obsession with its coffee. It's like, oh, my coffee. Like, when you have coffee in the morning, I guess it kind of, like, gives you your luck for the day. Strange. I'm still very early on in this game, but there's so much weird stuff going on that I need to see the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds intriguing. Just it's intriguing, like, or it sounds intriguing in the, like, in the same regard that you would consider a, like, a B-rate movie to be intriguing. Like, you just kind of want to see the train wreck happen, or, like, you can't look away from the train wreck. So, all right. I mean, it would be kind of fun to just...
Yeah, man. It's such a... It is a train wreck for the most part, and yet you can still see some ideas of, like, man, if he would have given, like, either the right team or the right amount of money. And yet, even with all of that working against this game, like having to go from PS2 to the next gen, clearly not having the budget, clearly not having the right engine or whatever it is, like, all of it working against it, it still has a sequel that's coming out next month.
Oh, wow. Like, that soon. Yes. That's crazy.
Yeah. And it got announced earlier this year out of nowhere on a Nintendo Direct. And Nintendo is, like, helping publish it, I think. So, like, yeah. The Nintendo just came in and was like, hey, what if you just made a sequel to this batshit crazy game? And they're like, hell yeah. And, like, even though it's, like, a different team making it, because, Swery moved on from that thing. Swery is brought back on to help make this game, even though he doesn't even work there anymore.
That's wild.
Like, well, he's still directing the game.
Maybe it'll have, like, the, you know, the resources this time.
I'll tell you this, it certainly looks better.
That's good.
Like, graphically speaking, it looks like something that belongs on the Switch.
That's good.
There's a great trailer for it that came out, and you can tell that they're totally trying to, like... You know, early on, the first game was very Twin Peaks inspired. This one, they are totally vibing off of True Detective.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That intro sequence is 100%. Like, the trailer is out now. You look at that, that's True Detective.
Interesting. I wonder if they're... Do you think, like, the fact that it has the potential to actually be, like, good is a bad thing in this case?
That's why I don't know. Because I know it's still going to be weird. Because there's no way, like, there's no way he's brought back on. It's not going to be weird. That's just, that's what Swery does. Yeah, like, I'm more worried that it will just be, like, kind of good. Like, it either has to be, like, the game is actually fun to play and then is super weird. Kind of like what Yakuza does to me.
Yeah.
Like, if it hits that kind of vibe, then yeah. I'm all on board. But if it's just like, it's good enough, then I feel like that's a bigger disappointment than it's a complete and total train wreck.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds like it can't just be middling.
Yeah. It's got to be on either end of the spectrum. And I'm going to play it. I have so many questions about that game. And I continue to do so as I continue to play it. Oh, I should stream it sometime. It's really something else. And not to mention, it's, like, not bad at all because you can save, like, literally every 5 minutes.
Oh,
they
put
a save point everywhere.
Yeah, that's nice. Oops.
Yep. So, yeah, that is it. That's the whole list.
Those are the pitches.
Yeah.
Well, let me go first. Mm-hmm. I think I might just keep it in the order that you gave it to me.
Yeah.
SnowRunner just sounds kind of wild and just like something I want to try for sure. I think Shovel Knight's something. I have a feeling Shovel Knight will be the thing that I enjoy the most after playing all of them. But I think SnowRunner sounds intriguing enough to me, like, in just in the way that it's done, that I kind of really want to check it out. And I mean other than like Forza 4 or Horizon 4, I don't really have a car game or like a racing game that I'm playing right now. And the fun thing is that it sounds like this isn't a racing game. It sounds like it's an open world kind of thing, but you're just in a car.
Which
sounds fun to me. So I would definitely be into that. Shovel Knight, yeah, sounds really cool. Yakuza, man, it's gonna stay in the third spot, which, you know, you should be happy about. I would call that a win. But it's definitely growing on me. The idea is growing on me. Mm-hmm. So
I think if you start from the beginning, you have a much better shot of, you'll at least know right away whether or not you're going to want to keep going down
the path. Yeah. And I remember some of those dialogue things that we were watching. Like, if I had a little more context, I think it'd be, because they were funny and just like,
oh God, yeah,
and bizarre. But it was, I think if I had a little more context, then I probably would have just gotten into it a little more. So, I can definitely see that. Deadly Premonition sounds like something that I would like to see because it could be a train wreck. But I don't know if at this point I'm going to go out of my way to get it. That being said, at some point I probably will. Maybe it sounds more like a spooky, like fall Halloween time purchase.
Yeah, honestly, like if it somehow goes on sale, especially after the sequel drops, because it might be backwards compatible on Xbox One. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, like that, I made that list and it kind of felt like that was the order it was going to stay. I could see a world where Yakuza even drops down to below Deadly Premonition if for some reason Deadly Premonition is just so weird. They have to keep going. Yeah, I agree. I think Shovel Knight is probably the one you're going to enjoy the most. But man, SnowRunner's really good.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So out of your list, I'm trying to remember all four. So Super Metroid. It was Super Mario RPG. Unraveled. It was Unraveled. That was the other one, and then Kirby's Dream Course.
Yeah.
So I think, in terms of what I want to play the most, it's going to be Super Mario RPG first, because I absolutely want to play that. That was always a game I've been meaning to, and I just have to find a means to do it. I think for me, second would be Super Metroid, because I think it did a much better job of selling me on why it's different than the first one. Mm-hmm. It's especially having that map, that seems like a big deal.
Yep.
I think that will finally help me get through Metroid.
Yep.
I think for me, Unraveled is then third, as I do have it. And I do want to see, especially with that, you know, the dream mechanic, I'm interested now to see how unraveling and then how that is built into the gameplay. That seems really neat. And then, no offense to Kirby's Dream Course, it's a golf game. I have plenty of golf games. I definitely will play it now, as opposed to completely ignoring it as I've been doing. But yeah, I like honestly, a good mini golf game.
Yeah, honestly, I think that's another game that we could get onto the Switch together and just play it online.
Oh, yeah.
Play a couple rounds online.
I forgot we can do that now.
Yeah. Try it out. Yeah. I mean, it's the mechanics are a little weird, but then it's just mini golf. So,
yeah. It's like 20-some years old now, so.
Yeah. Yeah, 26 years old. It came out the same year as Super Metroid, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. No, that was good, man. I really liked it. That was fun.
Yeah, that was a fun format.
Yeah, I think we'll do this again sometime as well. Yeah. Maybe after another, you know, block of games that we try to do. I think we'll come back to it.
Yeah.
I realize now we haven't really agreed on a game for next month.
Well, it's your choice, so.
Oh, is it my choice this month?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Maybe it might be time for Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, you still have it, right?
Yep, yep.
Okay. Yeah, it is longer, so I'm not necessarily expecting you to finish it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's not far off from Metal Gear Solid 2 in terms of time. Like, I think it only takes about 20 hours to beat.
Okay. Yeah, that's not bad. And it's a different perspective, right? It's not top down anymore. Yeah. So
you have the HD collection. So that will give you the better version, because it's based on Subsistence, which is like it's the extended version of Snake Eater. So that one gives you the full 3D camera instead of just a fixed one.
Okay.
Now, I have the PS2 copy of Snake Eater, but I don't have my original copy of Subsistence anymore. But I got PlayStation Now, and that has the HD collection on it. So nice. I might just stream it through there. Because I've beaten Snake Eater like 4 times by now.
Oh, jeez.
Man, I'm so excited for you to find... I think it's time we take a dive back into Metal Gear. I've been playing a little bit of Metal Gear Solid 4. And I would love to talk about Solid Snake. Or Big Boss, I guess, this time. This is the first... Technically the first game in the storyline.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah. I'm down for it.
Okay. We'll try to keep it under 3 hours this time, but...
Yeah, jeez. That last one was insane.
That was insane. I think we can probably cover it a little. We can cut out a lot of the fat, but it was just a lot of fun to talk about that game.
Yeah, it was.
So there we go. Next month, Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yep. That's what we're going to do. So thank you for listening again. Please check us out. You know, you can leave comments on the episodes at backloggameclub.libsyn.com. You can leave comments there. We're on Instagram at backlogreviewpod. We'll see how much longer I do that. We might just make a Twitter because the Instagram's hard to keep up with. So yeah, if you want to see fun stuff on there, keep, you know, start following on there. Otherwise, we're making a Twitter account and I'm deleting that thing.
See you.
Also, too, just real quick, I keep meaning to mention it and I always forget, so I'm going to do it now. Every year Paul and I do a charity stream in November for the Penn State Children's Hospital, which is just through Extra Life. So we, this year I feel especially, you know, it's, I know a lot of people are going through some hard times right now, but if you have the means and you are able to donate, please go to bit.ly/EL2020PS. That's bit.ly/EL2020PS. Even if you can donate $1, right now it's going to go towards the Penn State Children's Hospital. They could definitely use the help right now as we are all going through this pandemic together, and we want to make sure they have the resources there. I believe all these hospitals are setting up a separate COVID-19 fund. So you can donate, even if it's just $1, it would show, it would mean the world to us. It would show your support for the show. And you can even leave a comment in there with some suggestions for a future episode. So if you donate, we will shout out every single donation. So even if it's $1, we will happily shout you out on the next episode. And then possibly even take some suggestions into account. That's my only PSA. You know, if you have the means, please, you know, chip in $1 or $2 and just let us know that you care and it's going to a great cause. So
yeah, for sure.
All right. So thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Chris.
And we will see you next month right here on the Backlog Review Game Club.